Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a very special guest, and her name is Dr. Ruth Richards, and she is the author of Everyday Creativity and the Healthy Mind, Dynamic New Paths for Self and Society. As human beings, we all have creative potential, a quality essential to human development and a vital component to healthy and happy lives. However, this may often remain stifled by the choices we make or ways in which we choose to live our life, our daily lives. Framed by the four P's of creativity, product, person, process, press, this book offers an alternative understanding of the fundamentals of ordinary creativity. Dr. Richards highlights the importance of process, circumventing our common preoccupation with product or creative outcome of creativity. By focusing instead on the creator and the creative process, she demonstrates how we may enhance our relationships with life, beauty, future possibilities, and one another. Dr. Richards is a leading researcher on creativity in daily life and is a distinguished educational psychologist and board-certified psychiatrist. As professor of psychology at Saybrook University in the College of Social Sciences, she specializes in areas of consciousness, spirituality, integrative health, and creative studies. Dr. Richards earned an MD from Harvard and a PhD from UC Berkeley. She has researched creativity in educational, clinical, social action, and spiritual contexts, as well as in aesthetics and awareness, consciousness studies, and chaos and complexity theories. Boy, she has a well-rounded view. So anyway, you can find out more about Dr. Ruth Richards by visiting her website, which is drruthrichards.com. And that's drruthrichards.com, drruthrichards.com. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Ruth to the show. Good day. Thank you for joining me.
Good day to you, and thank you for having me. And you did well with the four P's of creativity.
Thank you. Yes, here's another P. It's a different perspective on creativity that I'm really interested in exploring. So, I usually like to start the show by having the guests kind of give a little bit about their journey and kind of how they got to doing what they are. And obviously you have extensive experience in so many different areas. So would you mind sharing with the listeners just a little bit about yourself and how it is that you became interested, or that your interest in creativity was sparked?
Okay, I'm sure. I think that creativity is the thing that pulls a lot of different parts of my life together. But let me honor my mother's mother, Helen, my grandma, who got me started doing art. And creativity is about much more than art, I found out. But boy, did she get me started, or I wouldn't be talking to you now. And be nice to your grandmas. And
are the source of so much unconditional love. I mean, you know, I think that's what grandmas were made for.
Oh, lovely. Well, thank you for that. And so that's really kind of where the story begins as a child, and where she gave me crayons, et cetera, and encouraged this and that. And not to do some kind of perfectionistic thing like a great artist, but to explore, to play, to have fun, and to stretch. So important. So I want to I later, after I'm leaving out many other parts of this career, but I decided to go into education. That's the UC Berkeley part, because I wanted to be able to bring to the schools both my background in science, which I have, and also in arts. And so I got into these education classes, and you know, I come from a family that cares about teaching and things, and here were these, well, actually the program was great, but here I was seeing all these schools that were, you know, public schools, asking kids to get 100 on someone else's test. And many of us grew up that way. So we're supposed to know this, supposed to know that. And I was thinking, my God, where are the kids asking questions? Where are they finding out what they want to know? So that was kind of number one. And then in this really good program at Berkeley, we started learning about creativity assessment, which I'll tell you about if you like. And there are things that your listeners can try, which it's not a test, which are fun and they're mind stretching. So it was like, wow, you can do this in science and art in anything. It's not like creativity is about art. And that may be obvious to all of you today. It was not obvious to me then. And I think there are still a lot of people who say, I can't draw a portrait, I'm not creative. And for them, that's it. They've identified it with art and with a particular thing, or maybe just with famous people. So we are here to do the opposite, to look at something that I believe is very universal, essential to evolution, and so on. To working in education, it's just wonderful to see what can happen to people when they start stretching themselves and they feel it's okay to take those creative risks, because it is. You're like standing on the border of infinity, looking at possibilities instead of just what we think is there. And so to do that means sometimes, you know, people are going to say, what are they talking about? But yes, this is good. And evolution likes it. So I was involved in education of still am, teaching graduate students at Saybrook University. But I've also brought my interest and concern about creativity to other areas, including, I think we already heard the list, but clinical very much so. And I've done some work on mental health and creativity along with colleagues at Harvard, including Dennis Kinney and others. It has gotten some attention and is really important. It's not the sicker the better. And then in social action and in spirituality, and the chaos theory thing is really cool. We can talk about that. But I see all of this as a piece, crossing fields rather than siloing different fields. The arts are here, the sciences are there, and they never talk. So we talk everything. Anyway, I'm here today. I'm really happy I decided to study creativity and was introduced to that whole possibility by people, including my grandmother and also the mom of a friend, right? But mainly my grandma. So we can go wherever you like to go with that. But somewhere I wanted.
Yeah, that's great. You know, that's a perfect, that gives the listener a good frame of reference of who you are and kind of how you got to where you are. Now, one of the things that I think we really should start with and talk in a little bit more detail, you touched on it, you know, in what you're saying is in that creativity sometimes gets pigeonholed, into, arts. Just basically arts, or maybe even sometimes in sciences. But the title of your book is Everyday Creativity. So can you maybe shed a little bit of light on the idea, the common aspect of creativity, that everyday aspect?
I would be delighted. And I'll preface that by saying that many people don't ever even consider this aspect. So because they don't see it. Because they don't see it, they don't develop it. So here we have everyday creativity. It wasn't something that we all thought of. We called it that name. But a lot of people, including John Dewey, long before we're on the trail here, that this is our originality of everyday life. So it isn't about art, or it could be about art, but it's more about who we are. So the beginnings, and so we're ending up, let's do the four P's here, which are four perspectives. We could take the perspective of the creative product, and I'm happy to do that. A lot of people stop there, though. They want to know, what can we make? What can we do? How do we do it? And that's it. So that's the product, but we go on to look at other P's. The process, of course, is how do we do it, or what's happening? And that's pretty mysterious, right? Because we don't necessarily know where that aha moment comes from. The person is us, and I mean every person listening to this, that but is there something about a person who's more creative that's special, healthy, engaging, maybe even more spiritual? We can go there or not. The press, which is about environment, press of the environment. What is our context? If you've had, let's say, a critical boss who says, that's no good, boy, is that a killer for creativity, mm-hmm. and particularly for our originality of everyday life, and particularly for a young child who's saying, oh, am I doing what I'm supposed to do in this class? So it's very important to have the right context and supportive people. What do we mean by this? I think any listener here would kind of know, whether you've called it creative or not, that there are times, the beginnings of it, that we have hunches, we have intuitions, we have guesses, you know, or we're flexible and we try this and then we try that. So we're really spreading our wings. We're looking out. Like I really mean it, standing on the borders of infinity, all these possibilities. And that's not just a purview people. This is probably one of the most characteristic things about humans. As per evolutionary biologist Dobzhansky, among others, who called it phenotypic plasticity, within our boundaries, you know, we have managed around the world to live in different climates, to have different cultures, to have different rituals and beliefs and ways and ways of being together as families and friends, etc. All of that is part of our creativity, and it's so varied, and it's so amazing. Go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, you know, and the one thing, you know, the description of the originality or the of life, was that the phrase you said?
Yes, the originality of everyday life, right, is another way to look at it.
Yeah, because that particular description really opens up the view that virtually everything that we're doing every single day, you know, because it's a different day, a different time, that virtually everything we do is a creative effort.
Mm-hmm. Or could be, right? Or could be. So this is why we call it a way of life, because there are other ways of life. But if we are open to the possibilities around us, or at least trying, because, you know, we have a narrow slice of the greater whole, right?
Right.
That's one thing, but there are plenty of people, and probably us at other times, you know, who are just following our habits and doing what we do. So we're more like an automaton, or we're wearing blinders, you know, or a story in chapter two, which is the most downloaded chapter of this book you mentioned. And it's actually online and has 191,000 reads, but it's a story of where I was driving along with my cousin and my daughter in Oregon on a country road looking for a certain place, and she was in the back seat text messaging people, so she didn't really care. But my cousin and I were saying, oh, we should have turned there, we should have turned here, where is it, it's getting dark, etc. And so we were not even seeing anything except our worries and where's the sign, which never came, for this particular place. And suddenly, somehow, thank heavens, a new slide came on the screen for me. I pulled over. Let's stop and think this through. And we were in the most incredible beauty, not in a town or a site. We were by this little lazy, you know, stream that was dark and flowing slowly with all these trees right next to this little country road. And it was getting dark and it was purple with sparkling lights from houses in the far distance. And it was mysterious. And there it was. And it had been missing, you know, 20 seconds before. And I mentioned it to my cousin, my daughter, and we were all indrawn breath. And I mean that seriously. We took an energy. We were there. We were, you know, present to this. So how much of our, I mean, that really impressed me, because how much of our life is this? We're always seeing one thing, and what else are we missing? We think we're seeing everything. And we may not be seeing anything. My cousin and I were in the past and the future. We were worried about what we hadn't done and what we were going to do. And we're not in the present moment. My daughter was in the present moment, but it had to do with the phone. Right?
Yeah, exactly. If there was, if she didn't have cell coverage there, then she might have picked up on it quicker. When it comes to creativity, you know, part of the, it seems that the idea of being present and aware is critical. When I think back on those, you know, aha moments or the creative spark that I get, quite often it's, you know, at times when I'm just present, like when I'm walking in nature or, you know, at the beach or something, you know, that's when that creative insight or, you know, idea or suggestion seems to most often pop in.
And isn't that interesting, right? Where does it come from? So if I may, we have these four P's. We can turn the camera around from the product P, although we can come back to it, to look at who we are and what we're doing. And where does this magic come from, right? Because you're telling me suddenly it came, if you like, magic being things we don't understand.
Right.
And so if you look at the kinds of things we've talked about, presence, there are other parts of this that seem to be very characteristic of people being everyday creative, which is not to say that everyone is happy and doing good things with their creativity, but we're looking at all else being equal, what are some of the best things that could happen to us? So here we talked about aware and present, open to possibility, many possibilities. And that also means we're not being closed off by some preconception that or expectation, which my cousin and I were driving along.
Right.
That we're going to really be with what's there and without being judging and worried or trying to make it fit our agenda, right? We're just gonna be there. So that's nice. It also tends to be a way of being less defensive. We've found, and many have found, that people are being highly creative. You know, they're not going along defending themselves or thinking about their ego, that is their picture of who they are in the world. They're really with what it is that they're involved with. And more spontaneous, more authentic. So these are all like wonderful things. And all else being equal, that can be more true of us if we're being creative than doing certain other things. This is the process. And then if we look at the creative person, rather than keeping on here, but we can come back to some of the qualities that seem more ongoing about creative people. And I also mentioned the press, the environment, because, boy, you can just completely turn off someone's creativity. I mean, really fast, by setting up a very critical, non-trusting, judging, competitive sort of environment. So it's very important, let's say, for parents, for teachers, employers, for really any of us with our friends, to be open to what can happen, because we don't know everything, or maybe you do, but I wanted to mention one study, but tell me if you have another question first that kind of
I think we're good. The important point there is that, you know, the idea of focusing on, turn that camera around, like you said, you know, focusing on the person and the process rather than the product. When it comes to the business world, you know, I think so often, you know, product is the desired outcome. And then if you don't have a product, you know, when you think about a housewife, taking care of her kids, you know, managing the household, a stay-at-home man, we don't want to be sexist here, but, you know, the idea of, you know, they may not have, quote, a product, you know, and quite often I think, you know, people in those roles will not see themselves as, you know, being creative, because there's no product, so to speak, but there is.
Right.
What's your point on that? What's your idea about that?
Let's just imagine for a moment that the process can be the product, right? So if we're talking about, let's say, dancers, we'll go back to the arts here, and arts qualify. We're not, the arts aren't part of it. Here we have a performance, something people are doing that is a process, but it's also the product. All right. But why can't we look at our lives that way? That we are creations in every second. We're changing all the time, and that is one of the, if there's such a thing as a product, because everything changes, that is one of them. I wanted a nice example on the homemaking, because there was a woman at one of our classes who, she was sitting there, and we were talking about homemaking, among other things, and raising a child, talk about creative or not. And she suddenly got it, that we were saying this is creative, or it isn't, but that it could be, and she was.
Right.
And she got up on her chair and jumped up and down. She was so thrilled to suddenly reframe creativity in a way that gave her whole life a new meaning and new dimension. And this is what it's all about. And through evolution, it's kept us alive at times. Let's say we're lost in the woods or being pursued by some carnivore or something. But also to find out what we are living for once we get away from the carnivore. Right.
That's good, because that's what I wanted to, you know, to get out to the listeners, to recognize, to that, you know, for them to start to reframe, you know, if they, you know, haven't seen their lives or themselves as, quote, creative, to maybe look at it in a new light.
Okay, great. I am going to mention this one set of studies, because for several reasons, our being creative at times helps us solve really bad problems. And so thank you, life, for that. Right? And dealing with depressions and anxieties and conflicts. Sometimes that's not easy. People who are creative are more, and when I say people are creative, I'm not excluding anyone here. People who really practice this as their way of life are more apt to want to kind of take on these challenges, not that we always do, that have to do with our life and dealing with something. So Pennebaker and his colleagues did a number of studies of expressive writing, and he didn't even think it would turn out, and it sure did, that people would write, and he had college students who were often in these studies, you know, write about something for like 20 minutes, something that was so awful that they had never told anyone about it. And then there was a control group, and the control group wrote about something fairly tame by contrast, like what their shoes looked like, you know. The first group felt pretty bad after. They never told anyone about whatever it was. And these were college students, so the whatever it was included feeling lonely, wanting to go home. But it also included some instances of abuse, assault, which are not going to be helped, you know, fixed by 20 minutes of writing. But how useful to get it out in a place where it's accepted and you may see it for the first time yourself. So these people were not necessarily feeling all that great, but they did it. And they also had some blood drawn in one of the first studies, by the way. And then the other people were having fun writing about their shoes. So 6 weeks later, the first group that had written about something so awful had fewer visits to the health center at the college than the other people. And this has been replicated, it's not just one study. And on various scales, they were, you know, doing better. This was good for them. And but what was really interesting, I think, especially for the doubters who say, oh, yeah, but what's this really proof? What it proved was on this, they had their blood drawn again. And what it showed was, compared to the control group, this group that did the expressive writing, so they were going deep into their minds, memories, imaginations about something, that group was higher on two different measures of immune function than the other group. In other words, these are our T cells that fight disease. They were better able to fight disease. And you could even say, does this mean being creative, you might live longer? Well, let's keep that an open question. But you sure might be healthier. So, but again, there are times being creative is uncomfortable because it means we're going into our less than conscious mind, subconscious, unconscious, maybe the collective unconscious. So, and we may find things that we're not completely happy with. So being creative also means being brave within to take a look at stuff that we maybe didn't always want to see, and also without. So I once wrote somewhere, and I got away with it because I am a psychiatrist. I said, we're all psychotic. Okay, because, right, this means out of touch with reality. Well, we're all denying there are these people down the street who are homeless and who don't have enough to eat and all these kids who, you know, don't and who aren't, et cetera, that there's only so much it seems we can take in and what happens to the rest. So being creative also brings this obligation as we're more open and responsive and connecting. I want to get back to the connecting with others too and look at relationships. But yeah, when you do that, yeah, there's stuff to deal with. So that's why I brought up the Pennebaker studies, which have been multiply replicated. And these people are more creative, are also, of course, they have better access to unconscious material. So you say, where'd that aha come from? Good question. But they also, you know, are sort of less afraid of life. I don't mean every last person, but yeah.
The thing, when you think about, the idea of, this, first of all, of being creative, you can be creative, you know, often, you know, or every day, basically. You can every day, maybe not every hour, you know, certainly not every minute, but, you know, there is that potential there for creativity. And now with this Baker study, you know, what you're saying is that, and with it being replicated, obviously it had, you know, durability to information, that basically that expressive writing influenced the health in a positive way by, you know, the improved immune function and fewer health visits. So that's, you know, that then is where the idea of everyday creativity and a healthy mind, that's the juncture, correct?
That is a big part of the juncture here. It's that we're going to be open to life within and without, and wherever it takes us. And so if you want to go a spiritual direction, that may be a total surprise, right?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you go back to the kind of everyday. I think creativity is what you define it to be, and here it's defined using originality and also meaningfulness, so it can't be just random. But if you think about what people do, so maybe you're, you know, landscaping the backyard, or you're making dinner from scraps, or you're making up, if you ever did this, stories with your kids at night before they go to sleep, and et cetera. I mean, there's creativity everywhere. And it's also teaching them or not to do those things. So I think maybe it's more like, kind of like earthquakes. In chaos theory, you have these lots of little ones and some medium ones and then some big ones. And sometimes they're good things, not earthquakes, right? May just be our life may be sparkling with little tiny bits of creativity. Every sentence we speak is, you know, usually new. And it's not all about writing. We have lots of visual things, lots of everything. And then there are some medium ones, and then there's some really a few big, you know, life-changing ones for us. Or we may start focusing on who's famous and did X, Y, and Z and think only they can do it. But it's really so much more pervasive, and I cannot say enough that I think we need to learn to see it. And our research group did at Harvard. We had to learn to see a lot of things that now might seem more obvious to us, because we were all kind of had our own biases. I'm sure we still do, but now not those.
Well, Dr. Ruth, we're about halfway through the show, so I'm going to take just a quick break, okay? And then I do want to invite listeners, if you want to call in and ask Dr. Ruth any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to post them there. And then when we come back from the break, Dr. Ruth, I want to go into a little bit more specifics about the characteristics of creative people, and then maybe how listeners can, what steps that they can do or things that they can do to help foster that creativity within themselves, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Dr. Ruth Richards, and she is the author of Everyday Creativity and the Healthy Mind, Dynamic New Paths for Self and Society. And again, you can find out more about the book as well as other articles, a blog, all kinds of things by visiting Dr. Ruth's website, which is drruthrichards.com, and that's drruthrichards.com. Okay, so with that, we're back, Dr. Ruth.
Okay. And thank you for that. And folks, if you're going to look at the website, there are actually four books there, and two of them are edited. And one is called Everyday Creativity and New Views of Human Nature. And that one has some quite remarkable other people who have contributed chapters, such as Rion Eisler, who wrote The Chalice and the Blade, among other things, and is interested in partnership societies and our further potential as human beings. Stanley Krippner and Alan Combs, looking at kind of dreams and structures of consciousness and other good things. So just take a look, and you can see if what's there interests you. And please feel free to go to the blogette. I just wrote a little paragraph to start, but I'll put any, there'll be more later, but put any questions or reactions you have. I would just be delighted if you feel like doing that. So
that'd be great. That's great. So let's start with the characteristics of creative people. You kind of mentioned about a little bit about, you know, being open to possibilities, but can you, in general, what are some of the characteristics that, you know, lend to the creative mind?
Okay, and I'm just going to mention a few, but go into them more. I cannot say enough about openness to experience, because openness to experience is really an interest in whatever's going on. If we wanted to talk about mindfulness meditation, that's one of the qualities of that form of meditation, is that you notice everything, and you're not judging, and you're accepting, and you're not preferring this or that. You are really taking it in. And the creative mind at the time, I'm going to give you a little exercise right here if you want, but at the time that we're getting these insights, so we're walking on the country road or taking a shower or whatever, there's more stuff going on there with the mind. But one thing it is in a mind state, because there's more than one mind state, that is more like a meditative one. It's very open and accepting and allowing at that point for many possibilities to unfold. So openness to experience is also interesting, because it's now part, when I started this didn't exist. There's now the five-factor theory of personality. And I'm not going to try to remember what they all are, but one of them's openness to experience. And so it's not very many factors to describe every person who ever existed. A little of this, a little of that. But what's wonderful is that a creativity-related one finally made the cut, because that wasn't true. And this is very much a creativity-related quality. And you can read more about that in the book I just did and other places. How tolerant are we of ambiguity? Like, I want to know, right? I don't want to sit with a lot of uncertainty and wait for even more things to happen while I don't have a clue what's going on. That's one of them. Now, I'm saying everyone has this potential to be creative, and is to some extent, and just about every one of us could be more than we are. So these are not qualities that person A has and person B never can have. These are qualities we all can have, but it depends what way we want to go. What is our, you know, way of life? And so to have that kind of first openness, and secondly, this, you know, interest in all of what's going on, whether or not that's what we might prefer or thought was going to happen, is really important. So it's a mouthful, but these are my favorites. Tolerance of ambiguity. The new book has about six of those, and there's one that very much is against any kind of gender stereotyping or stereotyping at all, which has often been called androgyny down through the years, and so don't miss that one. Another one is preference for another mouthful, and these are all thanks to the amazing Dr. Frank Baron, who's no longer with us. Preference for complexity. So that, you know, that kind of makes sense, right? If you're looking for the simple answer and you're done, right? Or wait a minute, let's look a little more carefully at this and see what's really going on. So that's another one that's important. Often you find introversion. Now, that introversion doesn't mean you have no extroversion and never talk to anyone, right? But it does mean at all that we're talking about people who also take the time to look within, to reflect, who value that, who value their inner life. And you may find there's a lot of spirituality in there. So I'm a Buddhist. I've 20 years, more than 20 years, but at least 20 years meditating, et cetera. But I got to go at one point to Vietnam. I am to spend time visiting and meditating with, these are 2-hour sessions, the nuns at Truc Lam Monastery in the mountains of South Vietnam. It's a Zen monastery. And I also got to meet for a week every day with the abbot of that amazing man, the most venerable Thich Thanh too, of that place through one of my teachers. And so I asked Thich Thanh too, what's the one most important thing that you'd suggest I take back to all these folks in the United States from Vietnam? And he said two words. He said, look within. Isn't that great? He's still alive too, in his 90s, doing his thing. But are we doing that? Or are we, and I'm not against cell phones, I'm talking on one, but the average, say that again?
Well, I was going to say, you know, in today's environment, you know, the cell phone, the social media, I mean, there is so much focus externally, you know, to,
right,
you know, what is going on around. I mean, that the idea of, you know, looking within, the meditation, or even mindfulness practices, those things seem to go by the wayside, with time, rather than that, how many people liked my post, or that kind of, those kinds of things, trying to get acceptance from external acceptance rather than that internal.
Right. Yes. Very good. So I read elsewhere, and I put in this book again, the most recent book, that the average, from one study at least, the average person would look at their cell phone every 6.5 minutes. So think about that. No, there are people who do more than that, of course. But there's just a constant devotion to who texted me, or, what was the latest on Facebook, or, And so, again, I'm not against all of that, but how do we keep it in its place,
right,
so it's not taking over our life? And we're talking about looking within, where there are, and we're standing on the borders of infinity there. So let's not spend all our time on the cell phone.
Yeah, you know, that's, I mean, when it comes, it sounds, well, it's all really where we put our attention and our focus. You know, if we are constantly, you know, every 6 minutes average looking at a cell phone or, you know, websites or surfing, that, you know, all of that, that time is taken away from something that could, you know, an actual interaction, live time interaction with someone who's sitting right next to you, you know, or, you know, actually maybe doing a meditation or spending time in nature or just, you know, getting your creative outlet, be it working on cars or cooking a good meal, you know, those kinds of things.
Okay. I'm going to mention a couple things people could do. Let's make it three. Three things people could do. Actually, I did this once at McLean Hospital in the Boston area for a talk for parents. And I had the first one I'm going to mention and two others. I forget what they are. And some parent came up to me after and said, "What are you doing? You're telling these young people," or whatever, they were interested in young people, "just to have no discipline." Well, this is not about having no discipline. And in fact, some of the mental health paradoxes come about because it really is a delicate balance. We tend to be helping people to think more divergently, to have more kind of multiple options for any question, because we don't get so much of that. But the rest of it still is important. So there's no implication here that there don't need to be executive functions that are loosely guiding us to make something useful out of all this. Okay. But going back to my original experience in the field of education, if you're going to do one thing, it's maybe ask questions all the time rather than just accept things. What, always, you know, wonder, well, what about this? And is that really right? And is there another way to do it? So that's one of them. And you know, if you just kind of remember every hour to ask some new question, pretty soon you'll have a habit of doing that. It takes about 6 weeks or so, but you know what they say. But where, and this also means automatically being aware, being open, being conscious, right? Or we'd just be doing our kind of robot thing. Yeah. So that's one. Back in this educational exposure at the beginning, we were doing some of the creativity assessments, and it's like I'd never run into these. I thought creativity was art, and that was it. And here were these interesting things that could be done in any class and are about looking at more options, always, you know, opening that picture. But it involves things like, you know, for example, name all of the round things. Name a bunch of things that are round, not all of them, right? But, and, you know, if you start doing that, it's like exercising your muscles at the gym. You know, you're exercising your imagination, and you run through a few kind of obvious ones, you know, make a circle, or there's the top of a cup or a wheel or a baseball. But then you get to, like, the moon, right, or a planet going around the sun, around thing, and so on. You get to more unusual ones. But doing that sort of, it's called divergent thinking, isn't the whole answer to creativity, but it predicts for it. It's relevant. And that's something people can do. It's not as if you can't do anything. There's a lot you can do, because it's about, as you said, choosing, you know, where to attend or what your priority is. And I think there's this way of life, and then there are other ones. I think if people doing this did live longer, which may be true, just not totally proven, that would get a lot of people paying more attention. So we have asking questions. We have divergent thinking. I wanted to mention another study because it's not all things we can consciously, deliberately do. So what about when we're like, there are phases of creativity, preparation, then incubation is this kind of take a walk with your muse part or take a shower or something. Intimation is where It sort of feels like an answer is coming, but you don't know what. And I'm doing a study on that right now, an interview study called Seeds of Creativity. But we'll go back to incubation. But then you have illumination, which is aha, right? So something happened before. We didn't see it, but something happened that led to the aha. And finally, verification, is it any use, and let's check it out. But here's one kind of study that was done to try to learn more about the neuroscience of the aha, because there is it. I mean, we can't see it, but maybe an EKG can, and it can. So I'll give maybe one of these to show how it works, and another one
sure.
is no answer. And I could put
Perfect.
The answer on the website, actually. That would be good.
Okay. That would be great, yeah, interactive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's not like there's one. There could be more than one answer here, but there's one that appears more to people. So you get three words. And the task, it's a remote associates activity, is to find a fourth word that links to the other three. Okay. And so there are different ways to do this, but I'll just give you these two and tell you the first one. So the first one, the three words are 16, heart, and cookie. And it's like, we could sit here for a long time doing it, but instead I'll just tell you one answer is sweet. So you can have sweet 16. Right? You can have sweetheart. And a cookie is sweet, so it doesn't always have to go with the other one as part of a phrase or word. But people tend, well, I'll give you the second one before I say more. All right, so the second one is school. And this isn't from a real assessment. This is from a book about the assessments that made it up for the book. So it's fine to pass it on. The three words are school, up, and mountain. And so you could think about this for 5 seconds and say, what? What goes with those? But when you get it, it makes sense. And there's more than one, but the one that's most common makes sense. Okay, so the way this one worked, and we're going back here to like openness and tolerance for ambiguity, that actually kind of links in EEG terms to more of the sort of slow wave, right-sided consciousness, state of consciousness, reverie, that links to kind of finding ideas and in the experience of the person who's doing it. But what this research did was it took people, it had them hooked up when they did these word things. And there's a whole other word thing, but this was one of them. And so they were hooked up. And then after they were asked, how did you solve this? Because most people solved it eventually. How did you solve this? Did it suddenly come to you? So that's aha. Right? It's like the avalanche of the mind, if we were doing chaos theory here. A good avalanche. Or did you reason your way to it, which you can do, or was it some combination of reasoning your way to it and suddenly, whoa, I see that, So people are different, and they may use one method one time, another method another time, too. But for this study, they separated the people who just had the insight, aha, I know what it is, or what one is, from the people who reasoned to it, and then looked at a number of things about their brain state. And so there are many interesting things about their brain state, but one was that right before the answer came, there was a kind of taking the brain offline, going to alpha waves, which are slower than our usual beta, fast beta waves, sort of offline about a second, and it was called the alpha, not the alpha burst, then there's the gamma burst after that. Anyway, there's a special alpha thing, And then there's this sudden burst of very fast waves, gamma, and the answer comes from a different part of the brain. So much more needs to be known about all this. This doesn't really tell us how the unconscious mind works, but it's a beginning that we don't consciously know what's happening, but stuff is. And the creative person who's really, you know, valuing these ways of living is more attuned to it, so they can learn to use that more. But it's not obvious. It's not like give me round things, you know. It's more,
right,
can we learn flavor of this state of consciousness? And I believe we can. And there was another, there are many studies of this type too, but one of them, they looked at the people and kind of their EEG or fMRI too, before they actually did the task. And some of the people were able to turn this, you know, alteration of consciousness, this mind state, on in advance. They could turn it on. And my guess is that many of us and you and people listening can do that, that there is a flavor for being in that mind state, probably one where the teacher tells you to wake up and pay attention.
That might be one.
But isn't that, so that means we could learn more about it by biofeedback and other things too, or meditation.
Wow.
But yeah, well, for sure, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know what? And we're actually down to the last 5 minutes here. we didn't even get to chaos theory. So, but people can buy the book. And they can read about, you talk about in the book, Fingerprints of Chaos, Nuance and Creativity, so people can find out about that there. So I do want to ask you, you know, what is it that you hope that people will take away from reading this book? What are some of the things that you feel that they can garner from it?
Yeah, what I feel most strongly about here is that we all have ways that we can live better, that we can be happier, healthier, more aware, more alive in the flow of life, you know, more present, but that this also will help us live better with each other and at all else being equal, and be able to participate in making it a better world. So this book actually just won an award. I don't know if you know that, which is called, there's a series of awards called the Nautilus Award. And their motto is better books for a better world. Isn't that great? And This one won a silver Nautilus Award in one of their categories on creativity, creative process. So that was really a happy thing for me to see that, They were on the same page as, I hope, of what I just said.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's good, you know. And I know from past guests that those books that have been Nautilus winners really make an impact. I mean, it's one of those processes, you know, the selection process that's it's very thorough and it's very complete. You know, very they're very selective with whom they award that. So that's a very good accolade to get for the book.
Well, thank you so much. And I agree with that. They have a 3-step process and they have criteria and they really go through carefully, have different people read the nominated books. So thank you. Well, I appreciate your interest in this topic and in the broader, yeah, the broader dimensions of it and what it might do for all of us.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your time. And I'm going to, you know, your book is one that I'm going to keep in the forefront because I think, you know, it's, as I was going through and reading sections, certain sections just got my mind working, you know, as far as, you know, trying to, I mean, it seemed that it stimulated the creative process within me, you know, in reframing. So, you know, that's a good thing for me to go back to and, you know, whenever I want to tap into that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that very much. And thank you for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. My pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Ruth Richards. She's author of Everyday Creativity and the Healthy Mind, Dynamic New Paths for Self and Society. And again, you can find out more by visiting Dr. Ruth's website, which is drruthrichards.com, and that's drruthrichards.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.